episode 64 of the Online Chicken School podcast. Today we're talking about hatching an egg without a shell, a Purdue redo, and dealing with a broody hen.
It's time for the Online Chicken School podcast. Whether you've been keeping chickens for years or you're just fixing to get started, we'll help you get your schooling. And now, here's the chicken tenders, Don and Susie.
Hello, I'm Don, the big chicken tender.
And I'm Susie, the little chicken tender. If you're interested in backyard chickens, you're in the right place. It doesn't matter if you have a whole lot of chickens out in the country or just a few somewhere in the city. This is where we share our knowledge, experience, and opinions to help you get the most out of your backyard flock. I had a pretty stressful experience the other day. I was helping Don by feeding and watering the chickens.
Because, very nice.
Yes. Well, there's so much stuff to do around here in the summer. And now also you're having to mow the lawn twice a week. So.
And by the way, it's gotten so hot so early this year.
Well, we have one of those temperature things inside the house. And you get home.
It's called a thermometer.
Is that the fancy technical term?
One of those high-tech gizmos.
And you get home at like 6 o'clock and you look at that and you go, oh my gosh, the outside temperature is still 95 degrees with a feels like of 105. So it's like, I'm going to stay inside for a while. Why don't you go out and do that outside work? So,
okay. First of all, what's the deal with the feels like temperature?
I don't know.
Why do I need that? I already know that it feels like it's 180 degrees outside. I know that every time I just open the door and my glasses fog up.
Well, I think it's so you don't feel like a wimp. You know, it's like, oh, it's only 90, but because the humidity, it's like 110. So you don't feel like as big of a wimp.
But why do I need somebody to tell me what it feels like? You know, the thermometer is there. That's that fancy gizmo.
Mm-hmm.
That's there to tell you what the temperature actually is. So, you know, if you don't want to go by what it feels like, you just say, what's the temperature? Okay, now I know. I have a point of reference.
Yeah.
The feels like temperature, I don't need somebody to tell me what it feels like. It feels like it's 3,000 degrees outside.
Feels like you're sitting on the surface of the sun.
I just don't need someone to tell me that.
Maybe that's for, you know, people that want to find an excuse to not go outside. Go, you know, honey, I know you wanted me to go out and do such and such, but the feels like temperature is 110, so I would be crazy.
I don't know. I think it's pointless.
Anyway, so I was out feeding and watering the chickens the other day with Gordo, our 13-month-old rambunctious 100-pound puppy. And he always follows me to go do chores, which I find very sweet. And there have been times when Max has come as well with us. And it always confused me when, after a few minutes of me collecting the eggs and checking the water and feed, he would like run Gordo off. And in kind of an aggressive way, he'd like bark at him and run him the other way. And I never understood why. I'm like, he's just sitting there. It's no big deal.
Well, and it wasn't right away either. Well, what happened is you'd be sitting there. Gordo's laying 2 feet away. Mm-hmm. Sadie's laying, you know, 4 feet away. Max is right there. And everybody's just laying and calm and peaceful. And then all of a sudden, I mean, if you were watching, you didn't notice anything change. But
no.
Without any warning whatsoever, Max would just chase Gordo away.
Yeah, and very abruptly. I mean, it was like quick. All of a sudden, he'd growl and bark. It was sudden and aggressive.
And you would always correct Max and you'd say, you know, Max, stop, you know, picking on Gordo.
Yeah. Well, I guess Max probably got sick of being yelled at, so.
He doesn't hang around anymore.
Yeah, the last several times, it's just like, hey, you're on your own, sorry. And now I understand what Max was doing. So back to the story. I was feeding and watering the chickens. Gordo was sitting just outside the coop door. I always had to go inside the coop because I empty out the water that's in the waterer and I'm refilling it. And the way our chicken tractors are set up, I go in the coop end, which I can stand up in. And then there's like this little door that's big enough for the chickens to go through that goes into the run area. Now, all the Barred Rock chickens were in the run area. And they were kind of passing by that little door every once in a while because I'm in there for, you know, a good couple minutes. All of a sudden, Gordo comes full speed into the coop and is trying to go through that little chicken door into the run. Scared the heck out of me. I didn't know what was happening, but he was going after those chickens.
So what'd you do after you climbed down off the roost?
No kidding. Well, it scares you because you just don't, I couldn't even process what was going on. And you had designed the tractors in a way where that kind of plywood wall that separates the coop and the run actually does open, but it's kind of locked shut most of the time.
Yeah.
Well, because Gordo's so big and couldn't fit through that chicken door, he plowed into the plywood part and it kind of swung open. So he's in the run area with all the chickens. They're all flipping out and I'm flipping out. So I grab him by the neck because I couldn't even get his collar and I'm yanking him back out. And trying to stay calm and assertive and being the pack leader like I've been taught by Saturday morning TV.
Yeah, but wrestling with 115 pounds of angry pot roast isn't easy.
Oh, gosh. So, like, once I calmed down, I'm like, okay, what just happened here? And I realized whatever it was that Max had been seeing in the past, he was putting a stop to before it got to this point.
Yeah.
And I couldn't sense that Gordo was getting to that place where he was intensifying his focus on the chickens and was going to attack them.
You can't tell the difference between Gordo drooling because he's a slob and Gordo drooling because he's hungry.
Right.
And thinking about chicken dinner.
Oh my gosh. So it was funny because I just watched an episode of The Dog Whisperer and they were talking about a dog who was going after the family's pigs. And what the point was of that episode was that you need to go back and revisit the incident with the dog, but then have the ending be something that's positive. Whereas this ending was, I was yelling at Gordo and dragging him out of the coop. I needed to have something more positive where he interacted with the chickens, didn't eat them, and we left peacefully. So I went and got his leash because, you know, I wanted to have a way to be able to grab him this time instead of by his neck. That would stop him in a hurry. And I went to the other coops with him. I'd sit him in the doorway and I'd have my foot on the leash and I'd be inside and doing the feed and water and stuff. And then anytime, and I was kind of keeping an eye on him. And anytime I saw him kind of focusing in on the chickens, I would kind of snap him out of it a little bit. And we did this for about a half hour. And then I came back inside. I got some treats for the chickens and I brought it back out. And I went in that same Bard Rock tractor. I went in the run side of it and I sat down and Gordo, I had sit down and we were in the middle of the run with treats and I was feeding them to the Bard Rock and we must have sat in there for about a good 20 minutes and the whole time he wasn't paying any attention to the chickens. He was being real sweet. So I felt like that was kind of a positive way to end it.
Yeah.
And he hasn't done it since. I've made a point when I've fed and watered since then, which has been a couple weeks, he has not shown any aggression towards him. So I'm sure it has not cured him of his taste for chicken.
Still not going to leave him alone to babysit the chickens?
No, I'm not going to leave him in the coop with them ever. But I think it was a positive way to take something that was a little negative and give him a good positive lesson.
So the point you're trying to make is it's one thing to kind of do the correction when they're doing something negative, but you also want to create the experience where they're doing the right thing so that you can reward them and praise them for doing the right thing in the right situation, for having the right energy in that environment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think so. I'm not a dog trainer. I'm not a dog psychologist, but just trying to do anything I can to make the dog and the chicken experience harmonious. You know, so I'm not always having to be on guard because that creates tension as well with the dogs. You know, if you're freaked out or thinking he's going to attack, then your energy level gets him to think there's something wrong. And if it always happens when you're around the chickens, he's going to say, those chickens stress out my owner, so I should take care of that for her. So I think with Gordo, because he's so young, I think he needs more mental stimulation that he's not getting. So I think that helps him as well, even going around to the coops, having a job almost, like giving him different experiences so that it challenges his mind maybe.
Well, one thing related to that is our neighbor on one side raises turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
When we first moved in here, he had three male turkeys. And I think it was that same, I think it was the first year.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, he lost two of them to a fox.
Yeah.
So you had one lone turkey back there. And the only thing to keep it company was his dog, Cy. And Cy and this turkey did not get along.
No.
This male turkey is a little sadistic. He would not let Sai sit down in any part of the yard. Anytime Sai would sit down, the turkey would go over and just start, like, making faces at him.
Uh-huh.
And the dog would get up and move along. He would just never let this dog sit still.
And the dog would growl at him every once in a while, but didn't dissuade the turkey at all. He's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So just a little while ago, our neighbor got some new turkey chicks. I don't know. What do you call turkey chicks?
I don't
know. Poults, I think.
Yeah.
Hoping to get some females so they could start breeding them.
Mm-hmm.
So they got four poults, and it turns out three of those were male. Only one was female.
Yeah. And
not
those
happy
aren't,
news.
Those aren't cheap either. I think they paid like $15 to $20 a piece for them. So to end up with three more males and only one female, that's tough.
Yeah. So they have only one female that they sort of need to make sure doesn't disappear if they want to do this breeding program.
Uh-huh.
And a couple weeks ago, I'm back in the barn working, and all of a sudden I just hear this weird noise outside the barn door. And I go looking out there, and here's his one turkey hen right outside my barn door.
Uh-huh. Just wanted to see what you're doing.
Facing down the three dogs. And I'm like, oh no. I'm not worried about Sadie. I'm not worried about Max. But Gordo, at any minute, could just tear this hen to pieces.
Right.
So I shoo the hen away, hoping she'll go back over to his side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to work. And again, I wasn't worried about Sadie or Max, but I called Gordo into the barn with me. So he'd be sitting there, and hopefully the turkey would go back to the neighbor's side of the fence and not be a target on my side.
Uh-huh.
But sure enough, it's not long before the turkey hen is back over right in front of my barn door again.
Like taunting them.
Yeah. So I decided to just start watching what they're doing. You know, I stopped work. I'm exhausted. I'm just watching what they're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to see how Gordo's going to react to this turkey hen. And the hen is chasing my dogs around, basically. Not in high speed.
Yeah.
But they keep kind of going up to it, sniffing it. And the turkey just keeps kind of walking at them. You know, not fast. Just kind of like, hey, what you going to do? Hey, what you looking at, eh?
It's like those chihuahuas that always face down like a Great Dane. You're like, really? You don't know that this thing could eat you?
Oh, yeah. And my dogs are all just backing away like, oh, I don't know what to do with this thing. This is weird. I've never seen a chicken this big.
Yeah, that's the scary part. It's like, come on, boys. Not that I wanted anything to happen to that hen. Definitely not. But it was a little pathetic to see these three grown dogs being chased around by an immature turkey hen.
Yeah.
Well, and this has happened a couple times since then, too. It's like, I don't know why she doesn't like staying in her own yard, but even
because there's four males in that yard.
Oh, yeah.
That's why.
Maybe she's just exhausted. Like, leave me alone.
She's like, I'll take my chances with the dogs.
But even as of this morning, we're going back to the back to clean up the barn. And there, I'm like, is the hen in our yard again? And you were like, you know what? I know our dogs aren't going to do anything about it, so she's fine. Because you had tried even throwing her over the fence a couple times because you were worried about her. But it's like, she seems like she can handle herself.
Yeah.
All right. Now, in our last episode, we mentioned that we had had a chicken class recently. And it was funny because I got a little message from one of our participants that I thought was just so funny. I had to share it. They'd emailed us to let us know that they picked up some cream leg bars and white Sussex chicks on Father's Day, which, what a great Father's Day gift, huh?
If Dad likes chickens, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. If it's just an excuse for the kids to get a treat and say it's for Father's Day, I always love that. My parents used to do that to each other. My dad would be like, Happy Mother's Day. And then he'd give her like a remote control car.
Yeah.
Like, are you sure that's for me? So this
Here, Dad, happy Father's Day. I got you some Matchbox cars.
Yeah. Want to play with them? No? Okay, I will. Well, this couple has a four-year-old named Oliver, and the message they sent was, the chicks seem happy, and Oliver's learned how to hold them, although he did bend a chick over the other day to see if eggs were coming out. But the chick didn't seem to mind. I thought that's so cute.
That's funny.
Children and chickens, just nonstop entertainment.
I tell you, they go together like peanut butter and more peanut butter.
And now, the news. News. News.
Okay, in the chicken news today, we're going to learn that Japanese high school students had a lot cooler projects in science class than I did when I was in school.
Well, that's for sure. Our good listener, Craig, posted on our Facebook page a link to an article with a video that showed this Japanese high school class that was hatching chickens outside of the egg.
How's that even possible?
I don't know, but leave it to the Japanese to figure it out, right?
I know. And to our Japanese listeners, moshi moshi.
When you watch the video, it's like they're cracking the egg in some stretched out saran wrap. And then they put it in an incubator, and then they can see the chick developing. It's like the saran wrap has become the shell of the egg, but now it's see-through.
Yeah, the impression I got was that the saran wrap was going to take the place of the shell.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that while the chick was developing, you could then watch, like, literally every second of it developing, because you can see right through the saran wrap.
That is amazing.
And I guess the way we've always known in the past how chickens develop during their cycle is, you know, you stop one at day one and then break it open, see what it looks like.
Mm.
Stop one at day two, break it open, see what it looks like. Stop one at day three, and so on. And this is the first time you could actually just literally watch any minute of the day as it develops from day one to day 21.
Very cool. So what did they learn?
That baby chicks come from fertilized eggs.
Well, we already knew that.
Well, I didn't say this was going to send anybody to space.
Yeah.
But again, it's like these Japanese students are doing these cool little experiments like that. And I'm trying to remember any science experiment we did in high school.
Yeah, I really didn't pay attention much in science. So the only thing I remember was in biology, cutting open a frog and being totally disgusted. That and an earthworm.
Yeah.
The earthworm was weird. Yeah, I just mutilated that earthworm. That was terrible.
Nothing left to eat when you're done?
Ew, I didn't eat it. So if you guys want to see this video and read the article about this cool science experiment, it is on our Facebook page, or you can go to the show notes for this episode, which is onlinechickenschool.com/64.
Okay, so the next thing in the news I want to talk about today is a little bit of an unexpected boomerang by the giant chicken producer, Purdue. You know, we've all seen those videos online that tend to pop up of an animal rights organization will find somebody to infiltrate big egg or big meat and take some video of some of the shocking practices that happen there. And then they put some dramatic music to it and put it online to just shock everybody as to what goes on.
Right.
So 2 years ago, there was this video that came out from the organization Compassion in World Farming. And this wasn't so much an infiltrator video as it was an insider video.
Yeah, it was the actual chicken farmer himself who had gotten kind of tired of and disgusted with the practices that Big Egg was forcing them to follow. And it's kind of like, this goes against what I think chickens really need. You know, obviously, if you're a chicken producer like Purdue or Tyson or something like that, you want all of your factories or all of your farmers to follow the same set of guidelines. So I understand how that happens. But the things that this farmer was saying they were making him do just didn't make any sense. Like, no outside light. Well, how much sense does that make? Chickens need natural light. So there had been a whole list of these things that this farmer was just sick of doing. So he lets this organization in and films what these companies were making him do. And boy, that had real big consequences.
Well, to give you an idea how this thing works is, I'm going to use Purdue, but they're all the same. You know, all of big meat is run the same way.
Right.
You have the big company and they don't own all the farms where their chickens are raised. What happens is they find a farmer and say, you sign up with us, we'll provide you with all the birds. You raise them all and we'll buy the ones that turn out to our standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the farmer, you have to set up all your houses to their spec.
Right.
And everything's done to their standard. Pack them all into a really tiny space, shoot them with antibiotics, and then some will get trampled. Some are going to be diseased. Some are going to be sick. But what you do is just kill those ones and throw them out.
Right.
That's the management practice. It's not try to keep all the birds healthy. It's just like get a lot more than you need and throw out the ones that don't make it.
Yeah, you already figure in for the losses.
Exactly. And then the other thing these videos would show usually is like when they come in to collect these birds, it's not like, you know, scoop them all up and put them in cages and send them on the trucks to the processing plant. Sometimes it's pretty ugly looking. You know, you see these guys and I'm just guessing they're day laborers. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're not people who get hired all the time. It's
not the farmer's employees out there.
Right. You know, it's a bunch of day laborers that come in for one day every 8 weeks to round up a bunch of chickens and throw them in cages. And it is brutal looking. They're kicking the chickens around.
You got dead chickens laying there that look like they've been decomposing for a while.
Yeah, they're not putting them in cages. They're like throwing them in cages. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, it's ugly looking to watch.
It was a very disturbing video. I was very disturbed by it and quite outraged.
Okay, so the farmer that was in that video we were talking about, his name is Craig Watts. And that video came out, it was in December of 2014. So I guess it was a year and a half ago, not 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That video went viral, went crazy all over the internet. And pretty soon after, like a couple months after that, Craig started getting some not so nice attention, let's say, from Purdue.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's got to be expected, right?
I mean, here he is, one of their contract farmers, and then he's the subject of this video. To say that his name was probably used in some not pleasant conversation around the Purdue offices is kind of a slam dunk.
Mm-hmm.
And Craig says he got some serious retaliation from Purdue. And then decided to sue them under what they kind of refer to as the whistleblower laws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he says, listen, I was just saying what happened. I should be protected and you shouldn't be able to, like, you know, punish me because I was just telling people what actually happens.
Right.
Well, so this turned into a really big thing. This lawsuit goes back and forth and back and forth. And it's very contentious, as lawsuits tend to be.
Sure.
A lot of animosity. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, in August of 2015, Jim Purdue, the head of Purdue Chicken, goes to the New York Times and says, we need happier chickens. We, as Purdue, need to do a better job.
That's huge.
Well, it's shocking because it breaks the rules of corporate America.
It really does.
You're in the middle of a lawsuit. The last thing you do is go to the New York Times and say, yeah, we kind of suck at that.
Yeah. I'm sure there was a lot of convincing that had to go on in the boardroom before he actually took that step, huh?
Yeah. Or maybe he did it. Maybe none of them knew.
That would be awesome.
You got all these board members wigging out when they pick up their New York Times.
Uh-huh.
He said, what?
Get Jim on the phone.
I mean, it would be like, again, I'll use McDonald's as an analogy. Remember when that lady sued McDonald's for the coffee being too hot?
Oh, geez, yes.
Can you imagine if, like, they're saying, no, forget that. Take us to court. Fine. And then 3 months later, the CEO of McDonald's is on, like, the morning news shows going, yeah, you know, I burn my mouth a lot on our coffee. It is really hot.
Yeah, the lawyers would be flipping out.
So anyway, that was, like, a really big thing. And so a couple months after that, Purdue went to all these animal rights groups. They went to Compassion World Farming. They went to the Humane Society of the U.S., a bunch of the other ones, and said, hey, would you guys come in and have some talks with us? We want to know what is it we can do to make things better.
So just recently, Purdue announced the changes that they're going to make, and they're big.
Well, at first, when you hear something like that, you're suspicious because you say, okay, they're just saying that to make a big splash for now, and then they're not really serious.
Yeah, like they're going to sit down with these groups and what they finally hash out is something that really doesn't make any difference at all. And it's basically the same thing you used to have. You know, how many times you see that in politics?
Yeah, just placate everybody until they forget about it and then move on to something else.
Right. But that is not the case here.
Well, apparently, because they have announced that what they're going to do is make some very big changes. Now, it's going to take a while. I mean, you got to understand. They produce, I forget what the number was, 700,000-800,000 chickens a year?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of chicken.
Yeah, it sure is.
So this is not something that you can change overnight, but, you know, they're talking about we need to change things and here's what we're going to do. Okay, now this first one, they don't give details, but just the way it's worded, this would be like sacrilege to the entire big meat industry.
Mm-hmm.
First thing is we're going to use slower growing breeds.
So that means no more Cornish cross.
Now, you might not understand how big that is. I mean, that is huge. To suggest to big meat that there is anything other than the Cornish cross is insanity.
Right.
They have been stuck on that one meat bird forever because it's the most profitable, because it grows very fast, and it grows very large.
Mm-hmm.
But because it grows very fast and very large, it has a lot of health problems. And that's where all these animal rights groups really draw a line and say, this is not sustainable.
Right.
Now, if you were to get some of those Cornish cross and grow them in your backyard, you can grow them in a way that's not terribly unhealthy for them.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they're raised in the factory farms, where you need to get them as big as possible, as fast as possible, you just have a lot of unhealthy birds.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of deaths because they can't support their own system. You know, their bones can't support their weight. Their heart can't support their weight. They're just incredibly unhealthy birds. And like I said before, the process has always been, well, you know, if 20% of them die, just get more birds.
Yeah.
You know, so what? The ones that die, just throw them out.
Mm-hmm.
And what Purdue is saying is we need to stop thinking that way. We need to stop thinking about just get more birds so that we have more that survive and think more about, well, what birds can we get and what ways can we raise them so that when you have 100 birds, you kind of expect 98 or 99 of them to cross the finish line.
Now, that is huge just all by itself. But there are some other pretty major changes that they're also going to implement.
For one thing, they're going to now add windows to their chicken houses.
Isn't that nice? So they'll actually have the cycling of a day. You know, it's morning, afternoon, nighttime, bedtime.
Another one of their goals is to double the rate of birds' physical activity. I don't know if that really means more space for the birds to kind of walk around, or if they're just going to start putting little chicken treadmills in the factory.
I think I read somewhere that they were going to add roost poles so they could actually roost, and some hay bales, so they could jump up on those. So I think that's kind of more what they're thinking is give them things to keep them mentally occupied.
Crossword and, puzzles?
Yes, absolutely.
Sudoku?
But things to add a little bit more of value to their own life while they're still alive, maybe?
Well, that's pretty big, too. It sounds like such a simple thing, but let me tell you, those birds live 24 hours a day for the 8 weeks that they're around on the floor, sitting and laying in their own poop.
Yeah.
So for them to even just get out of their own poop, I don't know. I like the idea of my food not living in its own poop exclusively for 8 weeks.
Except for those mushrooms you eat. That's gross. Maybe that's something we need to revisit. Ew, mushrooms.
Yes, we definitely need more mushrooms.
Ew, no. Well, I think this is actually going to pay off for the chicken farmers down the road, because we had talked about avian influenza when that was the big topic last year. And, you know, one of the things Joel Salatin had said is that sunlight is huge and exercise is huge for these chickens for keeping up their immune system. And the factory farms were the ones that were being hit really hard with avian influenza. So maybe if the birds are healthier in the first place, it'll help to ward off or help them to be able to get through some of these diseases that come through and sweep through our nation.
So again, they have their own timetables on implementing these things. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, but it is a very interesting sign, especially coming from one of the biggest producers in this country.
And I think it's interesting that it's been made so public, because now all these organizations and the public, they're going to hold them accountable. You know, it's not one of those things where you can just talk real big and not make any of those changes. You better believe people are going to be watching this.
Well, yeah, they've gone on record. They've painted themselves into a corner. So it is going to be interesting to see how it turns out. And I say, hey, good for you, Purdue.
Absolutely.
Okay, before we get to our big listener question for today, I want to remind you that if you do any shopping on Amazon this week, consider going to our website first at onlinechickenschool.com and click on the Amazon link over there.
And it's going to take you to the same Amazon site that you know and love, and you're going to pay the exact same price for the things you buy, but Amazon's going to give us a little bit of a commission. And this really helps us pay some of the podcasting bills.
So if you like the show and you want to help us keep it up, just go to onlinechickenschool.com and click on the Amazon link to make all your Amazon purchases. Some of you are doing this on a regular basis, and we really, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
There they go again. More shameless self-promotion.
All right, well, first we got a nice review on iTunes this week.
Yes, we did. And it comes from Noodlebug79. Very cute name. And the review says, "We are just getting ready to hop on the chicken bandwagon, and I found this great podcast. My kids are also enjoying listening to it with me in the car. We are making our way through all the podcasts. Thanks."
Noodlebug79, thank you so much for that awesome review. Make sure when you do get your baby chicks and get your flock started that you send us some pictures.
Oh, we love seeing the pictures.
Okay, well, usually when we get a question, it's in the form of an email through our website or through the Facebook page. Right. So then I'll read the question or Susie will read the question and you get to hear our vocal interpretation of what the person wrote to us.
Mm-hmm. But this week you get to listen to the question submitted directly from the person. Now, they're not here in our studio, but they used the voicemail button on our website at onlinechickenschool.com to submit the question. Maybe she was worried that I was going to read it wrong or...
You put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah, it's like, that's not what I said.
Okay, so with today's listener question, here's Gia.
Hey, Don and Susie, it's Gia. Recently, one of our chickens has gone broody. It's been really, really hot here, so we're kind of worried about her. The high last week was 106, and I know their body temperature rises when they're broody, so they can sit on the eggs, but she just stays in there, and we're worried about her overheating. So I was wondering, how do you break their broodiness? Thanks, guys. Bye.
Oh, broody hens.
What a pain.
We have a little bit of experience with those.
Yep, we sure do.
You know, when you start kind of doing some research and deciding what kind of breed you might want for hens, you know, that's one of the things people tend to pay attention to is how likely is it for a hen to go broody?
Right, because some people want that. A lot of people don't want to incubate the eggs, but they do want chicks. So they may want a broody hen that will sit on the eggs, hatch them out herself. That was not us.
No, we did not want the broody heads.
Mm-mm.
And by the way, I guess we should probably mention that when we say a hen is broody, what it means is that they want to sit on and hatch their eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So if a hen goes broody, you may have a little bit of a challenge trying to get the eggs out from underneath her.
Yeah, because she gets very protective of those eggs. So you'll open the nesting box or go in to get your eggs one morning and your hen will be sitting there looking up at you and, like ours, growling at you. I mean, she would, her feathers would get all fluffed up and her head would, you know, shrink down and she'd look at you with that one eye and just kind of, you know, growl at you. And you're like, oh, geez, what happened to this hen? And then you'd, you know, move her out of the way, grab the eggs really quick before she pecked you and got the heck out of there.
That's right. Well, when we picked our hens, we specifically looked for breeds that were very unlikely to go broody.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you raise enough hens, doesn't matter, eventually you're going to run across a hen who just does want to hatch her own eggs, and she is going to make it a little bit of a challenge for you to collect them every day.
That's right. We always say every chicken is an individual, and in our case, it was a Gold Lace Wyandotte chicken, and she would go broody like every 2 months. It wasn't just she'd go broody once a year or once in a great while. Yeah. I mean, there was more often than not that she was broody. It was really, really frustrating.
And it presented a challenge for our chicken keeping because at the time she was occupying one of our smaller coops.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the general rule of thumb with how many nesting boxes you put in a coop is one nesting box for every four hens.
Right.
And these smaller coops were only designed to hold four chickens at the most to begin with, so I only put one nesting box in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a new rule now. The new rule is always have at least two.
That's right.
Even if you have less than four hens, because what happened was this broody little hen got herself in the nesting box, and then she would not get out.
Right.
Ever. And it didn't matter if you took all the eggs out from under her. She says, well, it's okay. Someone will come lay some more eggs. I'm going to sit here and wait for them.
That's right.
And the problem is now when the other hens wanted to use the nesting box, they had two options. One was, hey, go find someplace else to lay. The other was, just climb in on top of me and lay one on my head.
And that is exactly what they would do. There was a couple times, and I've got to remember to keep my camera with me at all times, because you open the nesting box and there's two hens in the nesting box.
Yeah.
It's like, what is happening here? I don't understand. And then you go, oh, One's broody. The other one is trying to lay her egg, and she does. And then that broody hen grabs that egg, sticks it right underneath her.
Well, and you could always tell that the one who's trying to lay an egg was not too pleased.
No.
And you can imagine. I mean, I just, you know, I always end up projecting human thoughts onto our flock.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to imagine, like, hey, Thelma, get out of the bathroom.
Yeah. I'm trying to go here.
I can't hold it any longer.
That poor little girl. So there were some things we tried. Like Don mentioned, we would collect the eggs as soon as we could. You know, obviously we worked during the day, but as soon as we get home, we'd collect on the weekends. We would try and collect late morning because that seemed to be when the eggs were in there. Because if there's eggs in there and your hen is broody, it's going to encourage that broodiness.
The idea is if you collect them often, then hopefully if she doesn't have anything to sit on, it'll break her of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't work for us.
No.
We have very stubborn, very stubborn hens.
Well, they're our hens, so go figure. Okay, so the next thing that I was thinking to break her of her broodiness is, let's get her out of the nesting box. But if you kick her out of the nesting box right into the tractor, you got to walk away, and she's going to jump right back in.
Yeah.
So we like to let the chickens out, we let them out, and then we locked them out. So I had to grab her out of the box because obviously that's where she was sitting. I put her on the ground, shut the door. That hen would not leave the side of the nesting box. She was outside.
Yeah.
Outside of her tractor, sitting right next to the box.
I know my eggs are in there.
It's like, you can't make me leave. I may be out of the box, but I'm going to be as close to it as I possibly can. So then you'd be like, okay, now I'm going to carry you halfway across the yard. And it wasn't 30 seconds. She's right back there sitting right by the stupid box.
Yep. So I don't know what to call these strategies, but these are kind of, you're trying to play mind games with your hen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is psychological warfare, and you're trying to convince her that it's really pointless for her to sit on these eggs.
Mm-hmm.
There is another option that's sort of in the psychological warfare realm there that we did not try, but has been highly recommended by people. And that is to take her out of the box in the evening once all the other hens are up on their roosting pole. And basically take her out of the box and stick her up on the roosting pole with all the rest of the hens. And because it's dark, the odds of her taking a flying leap off of the roosting pole and going back to the eggs is pretty slim.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully during the night when the temperatures get cooler, she'll cool off a little bit and snap out of it. Now, the reason why we did not do this one is, like Don said, she was in one of the smaller tractors. And in order to do this, I would have had to grab her, crawl on my back into the run side, scoot all the way into the tractor, and while underneath the other chickens that are on the roost pole, stick her on the roost pole and hope I don't get bombed while I'm under there.
There's only one way you're going to come out of that.
Uh-huh. And that is pretty messy.
Yeah. All right. So the psychological approaches didn't work for us. I guess we just will never make our living as chicken psychologists.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
But there are also remedies that sort of try to tackle her physiology rather than her psychology.
Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd give that a try.
And the idea here is something that Gia hinted at in her voicemail. The fact that you want to cool the hen down. Once she decides to become broody, her body heats up because it knows that we're going to be sitting on some eggs and we need to keep the eggs warm, so we're going to warm up. Well, one way of trying to snap her out of it is to cool her body down to convince her that she's not warm enough to hatch the eggs anyway.
Mm-hmm. I just find nature so amazing, don't you? It's like, hey, I want to hatch some eggs, so my body temperature is going to increase. Is that just, it's just amazing to me how this all works.
Well, it's amazing to me that I'm not the only creature who lives by the thermometer.
Really?
You know, we talked earlier in this episode back in the beginning about, you know, the feels like temperature, and I don't need no stinking feels like temperature because I know when it's hot out.
That's right.
You're going to kind of do the same thing with your hen.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to cool off her body to the point where her feels like temperature is too cool to hatch eggs.
That's right.
So one thing you can do to try and get her body temperature down is put her in a wire cage. You don't want any flooring on this, no shavings. You just want her to be standing on a wire floor. Mm-hmm. And what you do is elevate that a little bit, just high enough so that you can get a fan under there to blow air underneath her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she's sitting on the ground on shavings, then it's going to allow her to keep her belly nice and warm.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if she's on a wire floor cage and she's got a fan blowing cool air underneath, there's just no way she can do that. So that will help to cool her body temperature down and hopefully snap her out of the broodiness.
Now, make sure you don't blow the fan directly underneath her, or else, just like you crawling through that run area, your fan will be covered in poop. So kind of angle it from the back and aim it at the cage, because boy, that would be a mess. You would not want to bring that fan back in the house.
So you're saying don't put the fan on its back directly underneath?
That's correct.
Like she's in one of those skydiving simulators?
Yes. I bet that's how she'd feel, too. Her feathers would be flapping all over the place.
You might come in and find all that chicken poop suspended in midair.
Yeah, maybe it wouldn't hit the fan at all.
Maybe that's where that expression comes from.
It's hitting the fan. Oh, we got to move on.
The chicken excrement has struck the oscillatory device.
That's right. Now, Gia and her mom are regulars on our Facebook page, and they post pictures and comments and things. So I messaged them after we got the voicemail and asked them what they were trying already. And she said they had tried a couple times putting frozen vegetables underneath the hen. Now, at first you go, that's hilarious, but that's very, very smart. You know, whenever you hurt yourself, instead of grabbing one of those hard ice packs, you grab a bag of peas. I mean, who doesn't do that?
I don't do that.
You don't?
No.
Oh. Well, I do because it can...
You don't let me use paper towels out of the kitchen. If I grabbed some peas to use as like an ice pack...
That is true. You would have to ask first which frozen vegetables to use.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'd be pretty upset if they were for tonight's dinner. So the nice part about a bag of frozen vegetables is it kind of conforms to the body easier. It's not as hard as like an ice pack. They did try that. And it didn't work, unfortunately. Other people online had made the suggestion of using like a water bottle filled with cold water, or even some people said to use a frozen water bottle, like a gallon jug to have her sit on. I'm like,
yikes.
I don't think she's going to willingly get up there, and I don't know how to strap her on to keep her on that thing. So I'm not sure how good that one would work. And this is something you're going to have to do multiple times a day. This isn't just a one and done kind of thing.
Well, yeah, because think about it. You know, if you go get an ice pack out of the freezer and you stick it on your arm because you hurt your arm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your arm's going to get pretty cold.
Right.
It's not going to lower your body temperature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got a lot of mass there. Now, a chicken doesn't have quite as much. But she would have to be on that for quite a while for it to actually start having an effect on her core body temperature.
Right. So you're going to need like a couple bags of frozen peas and do this a couple times a day. Because once all those peas melt...
Listen, I say just eliminate... First of all, you don't have that many bags of frozen peas in the freezer to go through.
Yeah.
Just take her to the grocery store.
Just stick her in the freezer?
Stick her in the frozen veggie section.
You know, that would be pretty quick then, I bet.
Just put her in one of those ice boxes with the Pepperidge Farm cakes.
Oh my gosh. Well, hey, people bring their dogs in the grocery store. Why can't I bring my pet chicken? The last thing that we had done before is dipping your hen in a bucket of cool water. This is going to work relatively quickly because she's going to be pretty much up to her neck in cool water, so she has no choice but to cool down. And we're not talking cold water, just cool. You don't want to shock her body. You just want to cool it.
Now, that seemed to be the thing that did the trick for us mm-hmm. and our broody hen. However, I'm still not convinced whether it was the actual bath or you were just more stubborn than she was. And she's like, all right, if I stop sitting on the eggs, will you stop dunking me in water, slapping me on vegetables, making me walk around with a fan under my butt? Could you just let me go back to the flock if I stop sitting on the eggs?
That could be. I don't know. Now,
you just have to show the chicken that you're more stubborn than they are.
That's right. Now, this usually took, I would say, about 3 days from start to finish of, you know, separating her out, having the fan on her, dunking her in water a couple times. Then after a couple of days, you're like, all right, let's try her out in the coop again, because there's no nesting box in this wire cage. She's not around the other hens. You're not really sure if she's snapped out of it or not. We'd put her in the coop. If she would run right in the nesting box and not leave for hours, take her right back out, stick her in the wire cage again. You know, after doing this once or twice, they pretty much get the picture. Now, one of the biggest concerns, like Gia mentioned, is if it's summertime like it is now, and she's in her nesting box and her temperature's going up because she's broody, she is not going to get out of the nesting box to eat and drink a lot.
Right. That can present a serious situation for the hen because it'd be very easy for her to become dehydrated. It's already hot outside. Her temperatures are rising and she's never leaving the box to go get water, or not nearly as much as she should under those hot conditions.
That's right. So, Gia, thank you so much for submitting that question via voicemail. That was so cool to actually hear one of our listeners' voices. And we really hope this helps. Shoot us a message and let us know how she's doing.
Okay, well, as always, thank you for listening. If you like the show, consider going over to iTunes and giving us a really nice rating over there. Also, make sure you tell a friend and get them listening.
And if you want to see the show notes for this episode, go to onlinechickenschool.com/64. Well, that's all for today. Talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Online Chicken School Podcast. Look for us on the web at onlinechickenschool.com.